What inspires a theoretical physicist to start a drug invention company? How do you choose the right co-founder? And in a multi-site, multicultural European organization, how does a leader manage communication? Welcome to A Call to Lead at LifeScience.org, where we explore the leadership journeys of life science entrepreneurs. I'm David Kirk, and in each episode, I sit down with a life science leader to uncover the moments that define their leadership. Today, I'm joined by Maximilien Levesque, physics academic turned entrepreneur, CEO, and co-founder of Paris and London-based company Akimia. Akimia uses a mix of physics and generative AI to invent therapeutics for poorly treated diseases. We'll talk more about the science at the end of the episode. Firstly, Max, thank you for joining me.
Thank you.
Max, it was such an interesting background because you come from a background of theoretical quantum physics. You have postdoced in that. You have a fairly hefty academic background in this field. You even famous in your circle for sure, famously solved the molecular Ornstein-Zernike equation. And this is kind of where the pivot from physics and biology come together. So I would love to know what called you not just to lead, but to move from physics to biology.
You said absolutely everything. Before Akimia, I was a full professor in statistical and quantum mechanics at École Normale Supérieure and CNRS in Paris, leading a research group. I did that for 7-8 years. Before that, I did a postdoc at Oxford, University of Oxford, and before that, at the University of Cambridge. And I also have a PhD in theoretical quantum physics. The point is that in all my research in mathematics applied to theoretical condensed matter, like liquids, ended up with a solution of a famous MOZ, molecular Ornstein-Zernike equation. I got a prize from the American Institute of Physics for this solution, mathematical solution in 2017. This triggered the attention of two major companies in the field of drug discovery. I was not applying my mathematics to drug discovery at all. In 2018, literally, they proposed to buy the technology, taught me the importance of this equation in drug discovery. And I said, thanks, but no. I really found my company. I will look for a co-founder, found the company, and be part of something so important that we share here, which is the finding cures for patients in need.
Tell me that story. Like, what was going through your head at that time? Because you weren't thinking about biology until these pharma companies came to you. So what was your personal motivation for changing direction and finding a co-founder then and stepping up to lead yourself?
When I was a researcher, my journey was to improve the knowledge of the society, producing new science, new knowledge for the society. And what happens after almost 10 years leading my own research group is that literally you produce, 7, 8, 10 research papers a year. There is like an obvious track for you. And imagine that someday someone comes to you and say, what you do can change the life of patients with cancers and with many other diseases. Wouldn't you just, step back, look at this way to be useful to something in the universe and challenge the statu quo, saying, do I want to stay in this track for which I love science, for which I was literally since I'm a kid, I wanted to be a researcher. And my father was a researcher and my mom was a nurse. And then you have the opportunity to challenge this statu quo, to be useful to something in the universe and to find drugs. That's literally what happened. I stepped back. I said, okay, this is what I want to become. The guy that found a company and tries to find new drugs.
Given your background, your dad was a researcher, your mother was a nurse, both, I think, helping helping patients, helping medicine in that way. Is that something you felt compelled to go towards?
There is an important, I think, question in the mind of every researcher, which is, am I useful to the society? Is the science that I produce enough, sufficient? Is it my role in society? I thought it was. I sincerely thought it was. You know, I was challenged with a mother who was a nurse. You know, she's useful to the society every day, every night in the at the hospital. She was very useful. So, but as every researcher, you know, as every person who has like a job that is a bit on the side of society with its own rhythm and the long-term thinking all the time, etc. So I was questioning myself, and the day I understood I could be useful to finding new drugs, it was, in fact, the answer was obvious. I was made to found Akimia and to trying to find new drugs many times at scale with technology. With the technology I had developed, we had developed in my group.
Yeah. And you, it was a, it, it sounds like a very obvious call to lead, this direct impact you can have on society for the better.
Indeed, there was this call. But then I asked myself, am I the best person to do that? I'm a researcher. I think I do my research well. Am I the best person to do that? The answer is quite obvious, in fact. I will be the best person to push for this new piece of technology and mathematics, etc., to be useful to inventing new therapeutic molecules. Yet, not alone. I'm not sufficient, clearly not sufficient. And that's how became my search for a co-founder and et cetera, et cetera.
This is, that leads me right up to my next question, which is, once you've made that decision and you're coming from a very academic background, you seem to be very, at this point of your story, you seem to be very self-aware of your own limitations, but you have decided to take it forward. What was the biggest challenge then you faced on your leadership journey?
The first challenge, the biggest, the first challenge was to find a co-founder.
Yeah.
Because you say the word limitations. It's not limitations. You don't know your limitations. You've done something well all your life, but you don't know if you will be able. So it's not a limitation. It's an unknown. You don't know if you will be able to do the rest. And the problem is you can't even define the rest. What is the rest? You don't know it. You've never done it. And I've never worked in a company. I've never managed people. I've never fundraised. I don't know even what. So first difficulty was to recruit the best person. Recruit is not the correct term. To find the right co-founder without even being able to say what this person should know what to do. I've been very, very lucky because after 30 people that I've met, I met with my co-founder, Emmanuel Marciano. She had spent 8 years at the Boston Consulting Group doing strategy consulting. And the day we met, I was convinced she was the good person. And I'm still convinced.
What was it that convinced you? Tell me the story of the day you met, because this sounds like it's exciting.
The point is, it's quite crazy because Emmanuel was also looking for a co-founder, and she had a much more business background, but she wanted to do something important. She didn't want to co-found a company doing yet another marketplace or yet another this or that. She wanted to do something important and deep into science. And so when we met, I was amazed by the depth, the scientific depth that she was looking for. And I wanted to become a business person. So we were fully complementary in the sense that she wanted to leverage science and I wanted to leverage business. And so we found each other. Plus, the fit was obvious. Literally, don't tell her. But after the first meeting, I was convinced I wanted to work with this person.
You know, the podcast is getting published, right? She's going to hear.
I hope not.
No, that's great. And because it's a common challenge, I think, that a lot of scientific founders have when they are looking for a co-founder. Like, who is the right person? Who are the right initial hires is a challenge that we get in life science org a lot. And I know we've spoken about that topic before. How do you think other life science leaders are handling that?
I don't know what they do. For sure, we wanted to be a drug discovery, drug invention company with science at heart. I was 100% sure that I wanted to be the CEO of this company, and I needed someone to structure the company. Plus, coming back to your two previous questions, the fact that there are so many contradicting injunctions in our day-to-day. You want to be pushy, but you want to build strong science. You are intrinsically multidisciplinary. How do you have chemists talking to physicists, talking to software engineers, we are 70 people company based in Paris and in London. So two cultures, and when I say two cultures, in fact, that's not true. The people, one third of the people in France come from the US, the UK, Germany, Australia, Italy, etc. So how do you build this multicultural, transdisciplinary, strong yet very pushy and lean and efficient and agile global company? I don't know how the other CEOs do. We try our best.
And it sounds like it's a massive learning experience as well. What valuable lesson have you learned on your journey, maybe from a colleague or a peer, that no formal education could have taught you?
We are all very different. What sounds obvious to someone is not to someone else. Think globally. You know, I think something that is very important is not to get stuck into the everyday difficulties. Bring this helicopter view to as much things as you can. This is my role, and sometimes I don't do it well enough. So aligning again and again and again everyone in the same direction, which is for Akimia to invent new therapies against cancers and other diseases with physics and genetics at scale. Not once. We are not a biotech. Not once. Many times. Thanks to our unique technology rooted in physics.
How do you align? Because you've got so many people now in a couple of different locations. How are you aligning that now? And how did you learn to do that?
It is true that we are more and more. We are 70 people based in Paris and in London. For instance, we opened the London office in the King's Cross area, in the Knowledge Center, Knowledge Quarter. We opened 10 months ago. Now there are 15 people. And we are recruiting in 26 more than 50 more people. We raised 100 million in total for that less than 1 year ago. We have big research collaborations, especially with Sanofi for 150 million. So indeed, we are moving fast. We are growing fast. And how do you keep alignment on two sides with many people, most of them being new to the team? The answer is very silly. Huh? Communication again and again and again and again, and being transparent on the objectives. So a lot of communications and the right people. We are very exigent during the recruitment because we want a shared culture. Having a shared culture, a transparent communication, stating when you don't know, all of that make Akimia a great place to work, I think, for multicultural and multidisciplinary projects. This being said, it's very difficult on a day-to-day basis, but we manage. I mean, if you know the people around you are benevolent and kind, and sometimes there are miscommunications, but that's fine. I mean, that's fine.
That's human nature, isn't it?
Yes, it's human nature.
Yeah. You mentioned this multicultural aspect to the company, and you yourself have studied and worked in the UK and in France. So before we talk about achemia in more detail, what do you find that's particularly interesting or exciting about working in European life science today?
So first of all, achemia is a global company in the sense we don't aim at French or UK patients only. We are aiming at global, at helping people globally. Yet we clearly are European at our roots. We are a French company at the beginning out of École Normale Supérieure in Paris. We are a spin-off, and even a small part of the company is owned by the research institutes from which we are from. This being said, what is beautiful about Europe today is that the talents are here. We opened the office in London especially to find those talents that you have in the UK, which are outstanding. We didn't think we would grow so fast, but seeing the talents that we were able to find in the UK, we grew more than expected, and I'm very glad of it. So the talents, the scientific culture. You could say we are bad at marketing, I don't know, in Europe, I mean, but we are really good at science, strong science. I've been lucky enough, and Achemia's technology is in a way or another out of University of Oxford, of Cambridge, and of École Normale Supérieure CNRS. We have the best mathematics of the world, and the best physics, and maybe the best chemistry. We will see when our first programs reach clinical trials. But really, there is something around the power of science to doing something useful.
I think that's a nice way to sum up Europe, especially you're at this nexus between so many different disciplines. And it's nice to see that perspective. What we talked about at the beginning, you mentioned what Achemia is. It's a drug invention company. As a leader, tell me, why have you chosen to address drug invention? Tell me about the challenge. And I think because for a biological audience or people in biotech, we're becoming more and more aware of Gen AI. But it's still a black box in terms of our understanding. So tell me what Achemia's Gen AI approach means for patients as well.
In fact, and that comes back to why we choose invention, drug invention company. To start with the technology that we have a Gen AI that invents molecules that are tested at the atomic scale with this equation you talked about and that we come from, MOZ equation, and gives a feedback at the atomic scale to the Gen AI that invents better molecules. So it's like invent idiot molecules, test them, find what's not so bad, gives a feedback. Invent better molecules, test them at the atomic scale, feedback, etc., etc., until you have found good enough molecules that you want to synthesize and test in cellulo, in vivo, etc. So nowhere in this loop that I mentioned is the data. And that's the elephant in the room when people talk about generative AI as applied to drug discovery. Generative AI, all the other generative AI, to my knowledge, they leverage the experimental data, so past data, to train and invent things that are quite similar to their training set. I mean, the point is it's an elephant in the room because it's a black box and an elephant at the same time. Because when you are in a new program, it's new biology, you have this new therapeutic target that you want to crack, you want to find the right molecules that will bind to this target and block the mechanism of the disease. But if it's a new target, or if it is a target that nobody ever drugged, you don't have examples of solutions. You don't have a training set on which you will train your generative AI. So in fact, what happens? In those situations where you have no training set, new target, difficult therapeutic targets, or so-called undruggable targets, you can't use the traditional, obvious the Gen AI or the machine learning methods, while we can work on it because what matters is the fundamental atomistic understanding of the disease at the molecular scale. To summarize, we have a Gen AI that is not based on machine learning, on training on the past, but that is based on feedback at the atomic scale so that we can tackle problems that really matter, those problems for which there is no solution yet, nothing to train on.
You know, I was just remembered this as you were talking. You gave a great metaphor the last time we spoke, like a ChatGPT that's trained only on English, and you start typing French into it, and it doesn't understand it because it was trained on English. But your Gen AI is like something that understands the fundamentals of language.
Exactly.
You could put any language into it, and it will understand.
Exactly. That's exactly that.
Those are your words, so I'm hoping that's that's still right.
I did not remember.
You come up with these genius explanations for your own science. Remember to listen back to this. But that's how I understood it when you explained it to me, and it makes so this is huge. So the follow-up question to this really is, what can we in, I guess, the life science ecosystem? So when I say we, I mean not just your team, your scientists and your investors, but also maybe pharma company partners, regulators, and the broader life science ecosystem. What can we do to address this challenge of drug invention?
Oh, that's a huge question.
I know.
Something that I find important, not to say tremendously important, is to find, I mean, one cannot do everything by itself. For instance, so find the right partners. I will give you just an example. We have been, so we have collaborations, research collaborations with pharma companies. And for instance, for what is public, Sanofi, Servier, G&G. And we have one large collaboration with Sanofi, research collaboration. It's up to 150 million to invent together drugs, or technically preclinical candidates, for a certain number of programs, of Sanofi programs. We learned a lot during this journey. I hope and I think they learned also a lot during this journey together, and we continue to learn with the collaboration flourishing. We develop our own pipeline at the same time. We have a wholly owned pipeline in oncology and in other therapeutic areas. And in this pipeline, we are approaching the selection of our first preclinical candidates. So we have four programs in total for which we have proof of superior efficacy in the animal. Tumor reducing their size, better than the other molecules. Are we today, Akimia, the best to push them, those molecules in the clinics in the 12 to 18 months ahead of us? I don't think so. We must find the right partner so that we will leverage their expertise, we will learn from and with them for the success of everyone. The patient first, because we will maximize the probability of success of our programs, the partner, and Akimia. So to come back to your question, to wrap up, yes, find the right partner, communicate. Again, I'm sorry about the communication part. I repeat that every day, but it's a major difference with my previous life when I was a researcher, where communication is once every few semesters through research papers. You must communicate all the time with the right partner, for instance, the pharma companies. What I'm very happy to observe in our ecosystem is that everybody thinks alike. Pharma companies have BD and search and evaluation people looking for those new technologies and new companies to maximizing the probability of success of their research and development programs. So I'm not afraid of that. Does it answer your question?
Oh, yes. I think it's not a bad thing to talk about communication. As a science communicator myself, I'm always talking about science communication and how important it is. The last thing I want to ask you on this little segment, taking a leaf from the book of the Americans, who are so good at storytelling and pitching generally, what does the world look like when you are successful? Paint me a big, bright vision of the future.
There are many ways to answer. Maybe I will go, since we are only the two of us, if I understood well, I will go with a very personal one.
Okay.
As I said earlier, my mom is a nurse. Success on my side would be that she is very proud because in her life at the hospital, she knows that this drug given to her patients is invented by the company of founded by her son. This is a very personal way of saying it. Yet there is another way of saying it that is quite obvious. The mission of Akimia is to invent new drugs at scale with technology. The success is then quite simple to state when we will have several drugs proven to work and to cure patients. This will not happen in the 2 or 3 years ahead of us, but certainly by 2030, first one, then the second, third, fourth one, etc., etc., etc.
It's a very positive vision.
Yes, it is.
I have one sneaky last question for you, Max,
Oh,
if you'll permit me.
not
Our
afraid.
podcast. Don't be afraid. You're chatting with a friend. Our podcast is A Call to Lead, and you've shared some very interesting, wonderful stories on your leadership journey with me, and thank you so much for that. But is there anything that we haven't mentioned about leadership that you would like to talk about in the last few minutes?
I will keep it easy and very short. I now split the world of researchers into two. There are researchers that are inventors and researchers that are entrepreneurs. In fact, research, there is a whole way of doing research that is being an entrepreneur. When you are a researcher, your job is to find the interrupter to open. You're in the dark. Your job is to find the interrupter, turn on the lights, and let the other experts come into the room and find all the details, etc. But your job is finished. Your job is to move to the other room, find the lights, the interrupter, etc., etc. We are entrepreneurs by heart. We are entrepreneurs. Of course, my day-to-day life is very, very different. Yet I am convinced so many extraordinary researchers would be good entrepreneurs, at least seed stage entrepreneurs. So don't be afraid. Create your company, learn a lot of things. Yeah, that's it. I don't know if it's a, I don't know how to say that, but there are so many things to learn in the on the other side of the street. But it's the same street. It's deep science and to doing something useful to the universe, and in our case, finding new drugs at scale with technologies. And do not hesitate, since it is a personal discussion. Do not those people that would come and watch this podcast, do not hesitate to drop me an email. You're a professor or researcher. You want to become an entrepreneur. I'd be very glad and very open in the discussion with you. Do not hesitate.
Max, that is a very generous offer to our listeners. Thank you so much for speaking with me today.
My pleasure, Dave.
It's no secret that Europe is a global leader in generating translational science. We're grateful at LifeScience.org to have a community of over 400 life science CEOs, leaders driving change in biotech, medtech, tech bio, and healthcare. The conversations inside our community, stories of conviction, navigating challenges, and making bold decisions, inspire us every week. To hear the stories, lessons, and experiences of our life science leaders, listen to A Call to Lead at LifeScience.org, available on all good podcasting platforms.